In the case that we have on at this session is Friendly Village Nursing and Rehab LLC versus DWD and LIRC.
Good morning. Alon Stein for the petitioners.
This morning, the way I have you lined up is 25 minutes to start, followed by 30 minutes to argue, and 5 minutes in rebuttal. Is that correct? All right. Also, this morning we have school groups here. We have the Muslim Student Association of Madison. Could you rise, please? Nice to see you here this morning. Welcome. We hope you enjoy your time here. And Port Washington High School. Port Washington High School is here as well?
I think that they're here for the second argument.
Okay. All right. That's right. I was a little early. Okay. Anyway, I don't know if you'll be staying on this morning after the second oral argument, but Justice Kurofsky would be the one to come out and talk to you, not about the cases that we're hearing this morning, but rather about court proceedings, answer any questions that you have, and I usually like to say, make sure you think of some really hard ones because she's very smart and she likes to be challenged. So, all right.
Thanks, Chief.
So with that, we will start out with Mr. Stein presenting your argument to the court.
Honored Chief Justice, honored justices, may it please the court. My name is Alon Stein. I represent the plaintiffs, petitioners, appellants, Friendly Village Nursing and Rehab, and Friendly Village Healthcare Center. In light of this court's ruling in Tetra Tech versus Wisconsin Department of Revenue, the commission should not be allowed to have its own legal interpretation of excuse that is different and inconsistent with this court's interpretation as stated in Casper versus American International and Get Deference. It is for the court to decide what the interpretation of the law is, and if administrative agencies do it, that is an encroachment on the judicial branch. CASPER requires a consideration of the interests of justice, but the commission's legal interpretation of excusable neglect does not consider the interests of justice. The commission's position is that it does not need to follow this court's CASPER decision and apply the interests of justice. Our position is that the commission cannot come up with a contradictory opinion to this court's legal interpretation get deference.
Isn't CASPER distinguishable because it applies to a civil procedure statute rather than an unemployment insurance statute?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, Your Honor. It interprets the term excusable, and it is our position that whether or not it's a litigation situation or whether or not it's an administrative agency situation where an administrative agency is rendering decisions, it's the same term and it's dealing with the same context of extensions of time. And whenever there's an extension of time, the decision maker needs to be guided by principles of equity and fairness, or else what else are they guided by? There needs to be some consistency, and it is our position that the interest of justice factors provides that consistency. Both courts and administrative agencies need to be guided by considerations and principles of justice, fairness, and consistency. Public policy of having...
Is the standard of review for a regulatory matter more circumscribed than it would be if we were, for instance, reviewing a determination under 80607, you know, the relief from judgment, as we see, or other civil statutes in Chapter 800? What is there a difference in the standard of review? And if so, what is the standard of review for a regulatory matter?
It's de novo before you, Your Honor. And whereas if it was in front of a court, it would be different because there is great deference provided to the court in terms of its decisions as to whether or not to extend time. Here, we're saying that the proper factors were not considered, and therefore there is an issue of law, which is why it's before this court.
In addition to being de novo, is it otherwise circumscribed because it's regulatory?
Correct.
That's a question, yeah. Is it otherwise circumscribed because it's regulatory?
We're arguing that the wrong application of the law was done by the administrative agency, and under Tetra Tech there's no deference, in fact zero deference should be given to the commission, and therefore it is a de novo review of a legal error.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. And both courts and administrative agencies need to be guided by considerations and principles of justice, fairness, and consistency, and the public policy of having all matters decided on the merits, especially if there's no prejudice. As this court stated in Split Rock versus Lumber Liquidators.
What I was really looking for in regulatory matters, it's axiomatic, I think, that you look at it, did the agency act in excess of its powers? There's like a 3 or 4 prong test. That's what I was referring to. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, and I'm saying that they are acting in excess of their powers because they're encroaching upon the judicial branch.
Yes, and what's the second prong? If you know, that's okay. This isn't meant to be a test, and so that's okay.
Your Honor, what is the second prong? If you have it in front of you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Glad you asked the question, whether or not it was procured by fraud.
We're not saying that it was procured by fraud. We're saying that there's an encroachment on judicial branch. It's the job of the courts to interpret the law, not the administrative agency.
You know, and I know that. I know Tetra Tech. And the third is... And the reason I ask this, the third is the commission's that the commission's findings of fact do not support its orders. And I just ask the question to indicate if there's a difference between our review of a civil matter in a civil context, kind of following up perhaps what was earlier asked, maybe not, no. This is a de novo question, then, okay?
It's an issue of law, and we're saying that the proper standard was not applied.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. Okay. Fine.
And again, as this court stated in Split Rock versus Lumber Liquidators, which is a huge public policy in Wisconsin, prejudice must be considered and found if the late party is to be penalized. Paragraph 33 of the Lumber Liquidators case, the court said, we agree that prejudice should be considered in determining the sanction, if any for violation of the prompt filing requirements. As we explained below, prejudice must be considered and found before the court weighs the default judgment as a sanction for failure to file promptly. And the analogy in the administrative context is that prejudice must be considered and found if the late party is to be penalized. Here, it was conceded that if not for the late filing, our case had 100% chance of success on the merits, 100%. So there's no prejudice because it was conceded and stipulated there was 100% chance that we would have succeeded on the merits. And there are 7 factors of the interest of justice factors. That particular factor is 100%. And I think under Lumber Liquidators, that's pretty significant.
Counsel, excusable neglect is a term of art. It's defined in the law, has a long history, and you can define in our cases. Black's Law Dictionary describes it as a failure, which the law will excuse, to take some proper step at the proper time, not because of the party's own carelessness, inattention, or willful disregard of the court's process, but because of some unexpected or unavoidable hindrance or accident, or because of reliance on the care and vigilance of the party's counsel or on a promise made by the adverse party. Do you agree that that standard is the law in Wisconsin on excusable neglect, or are you arguing that the law is something different on that?
I'm arguing 2 things. I'm saying there's how excusable neglect is defined, but also interpreted by this court in Casper. And Casper interpreted excusable neglect to include a consideration of the interest of justice factor always.
If we disagree with your interpretation of Casper as applying to all statements regarding, you know, excusable neglect in the statutes, do you lose, or is there another argument that you think supports your client's position?
The argument is consistent with everything. It's if excusable neglect, all decisions of any decision maker need to be guided by principles of justice and fairness. It seems as if the commission is arguing that somehow there is a separation of powers issue that they don't have to act justly.
Well, traditionally, excusable neglect doesn't necessarily incorporate that as the definition I just read. A party could be careless and miss a deadline. That's not excusable neglect ordinarily. That might be unfair in some sense, maybe not. But, you know, if the legislature sets a deadline, whether, you know, if a student submits their assignment late and the teacher says, you're going to get an F if you submit your assignment late, maybe that's fair, maybe it's not fair, but those are the rules. And the teacher says, I'm going to give you an F unless you have something like excusable neglect. That's a different kind of rule, which may or may not include considerations of how fair it is to the student or principles of equity. So, again, traditionally, excusable neglect does not incorporate that. I understand your argument. You think Casper makes it do so. And I guess I'm trying to understand if Casper is not, if your interpretation of Casper is not something that we agree with, that it broadly applies to every instance of excusable neglect in the statutes, including this this instance totally separate from the rules of civil procedure, do you still have legs to stand on with your argument, or does your argument really hinge on Casper?
Casper is a huge part of our argument. However, the ALJ down below listened and examined the testimony of the witnesses, weighed the credibility of the witnesses, and found excusable neglect. The commission then overturned it because it said it didn't have to apply the interest of justice factors. The fact that there was a decision maker who listened to the testimony, evaluated the testimony, evaluated the credibility of the witnesses, and found excusable neglect shows that there's a possibility for excusable neglect.
Sure, but we review the decision of LURC, not the ALJ, correct?
Say it again?
We review the decision of LURC, not the ALJ, correct?
The decision of the commission is an overturning of the determination of the ALJ, so they go hand in hand.
Counsel, one of the things that the ALJ relied on, and that is in the record because it was argued on behalf of your client, is that the initial form that was filled out, which is a form that was created by the agency, does not ask about a transfer of business. That doesn't come about until you get to the ROVT form, which is the form that's late, correct?
Correct.
And the initial fill-out form does not talk about a transfer of business. It talks about an activity. And because there was no mention of business in that, your client filled out, no, did you transfer this activity, correct? And that was pointed out in the initial hearing. And then the reason the ROVT form is late is because the agency never sent it to your client, correct?
That's our position. The term activity was vague.
Right.
And it wasn't clear. No one was asking, are you interested in acquiring the unemployment insurance rate of Beller?
Right.
And so that led to a cascade and a domino effect.
Okay. And so the reason it was late is your client sent it back as soon as they got it, but they didn't know that they had to submit it because the agency never sent it to them, correct?
And it gets dicer, Your Honor. That when we asked for an extension, we bought two facilities on the same day. For one facility, we were granted excusable neglect under the same circumstances.
Yes.
And for the other facility, we were not.
Well, I think one of the things that I thought was interesting is when we're looking at excusable neglect, what were the factors that caused the lateness? Was it all just carelessness by your client? And I think what was explained at the agency level is that there was no request on this form the agency put together for the transfer of a business. The business word was missing, correct? It was activity.
Right. The word activity was undefined in the form.
Okay. But the ROBT form talks about a transfer of a business, correct?
That's what the B stands for, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So I think that I found that very interesting, that if you're looking at, was your client just careless? Well, no. Your client filled it out just as soon as they got the form. They never got it because the agency never sent it to them.
And that form, the ROBT form,
right,
is the form that states what the deadline is.
Right. It states the deadlines. That's true. And it also talks about a transfer of the business. In fact, that's the label at the top of the form. It says report on business transfer, correct?
Correct.
But that's not anywhere on the initial form that your client filled out in August.
And
before they closed.
And we argue that in our briefs at length, and I think that answers the question that was previously asked, in terms of excusable neglect. But I also want to focus on CASPER, because there should be a consistent interpretation of how does someone decide whether or not there's excusable neglect.
Well, CASPER uses an equity balance, and essentially what they say is, there is no harm to the agency. So if you're going to balance what's going on there and balance what happens to your client gets the full weight, right? And the agency has no hardship.
There is no hardship whatsoever.
Right. And your client fits totally within a business transfer, which is what the ROBT form talks about.
Which was not sent to us on time.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let's take a look at the statutes. Isn't that what we have to do here and to determine what is meant by the legislature in defining excusable neglect? The statute we have before us that we are interpreting and applying is 108.16. Unless the transferee satisfies the department that the application was late as a result of excusable neglect, etc. One of the problems I have with your argument, so respond to my concern, if you will, is that just a little bit before this statute, still in Chapter 108, which deals with unemployment compensation, the legislature used the term in the interest of justice in 108.068 sub 6. The department may, in the interest of justice, when talking about a limited liability company. So oftentimes we say, well, we look at statutes in context, and then the old argument is, well, the legislature knows how to use the words interest of justice. And a little bit above in the same chapter, they use those words. And yet in the statute, which is the focus of our inquiry, they use something different. They used excusable neglect. So how do you respond to that oft-made argument about interpreting a statute in context when the legislature uses a different word and you're trying to say that they're essentially excusable neglect incorporates the equities of interest of justice?
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the context of 108.16 when it is an extension of time. You have to do it by a certain date or unless you show excusable neglect. Just like in CASPER, it's in 806.07, it talks about extension of time. So that's that context. The context in the statute that you mentioned earlier is not the context of an extension of time.
No, but it's all in the same chapter. I mean, if we're looking at unemployment comp, they're writing these statutes, hopefully, in unemployment comp to fit together, right? It's not like it's Chapter 990 or something we're talking about. We're talking about Chapter 108 and how unemployment comp works together. One place they use interest of justice you should consider, another place excusable neglect is the term.
Right. Again, it's the context of the time, extension of time. And also, if you look at the Casper case, the words interest of justice don't appear in 806.07 at all. And the interest of justice factors, the seven of them, are not listed in any statute. There's no statute that says the interests of justice are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, nowhere. No. So we're arguing that Casper says, this court has ruled, that excusable neglect includes consideration of the interests of fact, interests of justice.
As I recall, 806.07(1)(h), correct me if I'm wrong, also has the word other. And how do you respond to that? A has excusable neglect, and then H, of course, has been defined by our case law to include the interest of justice. But it used the words other. I think your opposing counsel would advance that other means other than A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Right. So 806.071H is not an excusable neglect. It deals with other reasons for the extension.
Yeah, other than A, which is excusable neglect.
Right. So that's a different statute. Casper did not involve 806.071H. It involved 806.07, I think it was 1A, that dealt with excusable neglect. 1H is something different. 1H requires extraordinary circumstances, which is a completely different category.
But my point is this. 1H has been defined in case after case after case after case as including the interest of justice.
Well, so has the case involving excusable neglect.
So excusable neglect has a particular definition.
But it has also been ruled upon and held to include the interest of justice factors. But we're arguing both things. On the one hand, we're arguing that you need to have some consistency, and that's what Casper does. On the other hand, we're saying that we have satisfied the excusable neglect standard because we did not get the deadline that was provided to us because an incorrect click was made on an online form. So we're arguing both things, and we're saying that it should be consistency. If the interest of justice factors are to be applied, and when you're asking for an extension on a default situation issue, and that deals with a decision, it's no different here when in an administrative agency context, especially when administrative agencies are now making decisions just like courts are. There needs to be consistency in how that's decided. Otherwise, it's a free-for-all.
Mr. Stein, the other attorneys say that Casper and other cases stand for the proposition that first excusable neglect, and then the court looks to interests of justice. And your opponents say you're conflating those two prongs. Do we look at excusable neglect first and then the interests of justice, or are you asking us to look at them all at once? And if so, why?
All at once, because if the statute says, even 108.16, excusable neglect, if first you make a determination of excusable neglect and that's found, you'll never need to go to the interest of justice because excusable neglect will be found and the extension will be granted. What we're arguing is that as part of the excusable neglect determination, you need to look at the interest of justice factors.
And isn't, I'm going to ask you a different question now. I'm having trouble with the proof of excusable neglect because the agent who engaged in what you are calling excusable neglect never testified. Should we be concerned about that at all? The employee, right? The nephew?
First of all, we had a corporate representative who bound the corporation at the hearing. That's first of all. Second of all, the ALJ below found that dealt with one factor, good faith, and there was a finding that because we acted as fast as we could, that we satisfied that. In the interest of justice rubric, We have two very, very strong factors, lack of prejudice and 100% chance of success on the merits, and also the vague form that was provided to us, asking us about acquiring an activity. The person who was at the hearing who testified was a owner and bound the corporation and everything that was said at the hearing. And the one issue that was brought up by the commission regarding the person not being able to testify only goes towards one of the factors. There are other factors in the interest of justice factors that are very, very, very strong, especially the fact that it's conceded and stipulated by the commission that if not for the late filing, which we fixed as soon as possible, that we would have gotten this new rate 100%.
If we do not agree with you as far as the interest of justice is concerned, can you still win?
Yes, because our argument has been also that this form did not notify us of the deadline. It asked about acquiring an activity.
What activity?
An activity. It doesn't say, do you want to acquire the unemployment insurance rate of the seller? ? That's how I would write it if I was writing it in English. But it says, do you want to acquire an activity? An undefined term. And because the check was not marked correctly, we didn't get the form. Because we didn't get the form, the document wasn't turned on time.
Thank you.
Decision as to whether or not my client would succeed to the unemployment insurance rate of the seller should have been made on the merits, in accordance with the well-established policy of having matters decided on the merits, as stated by this court in Split Rock versus Lumber Liquidators. The commission argues that being guided by the interests of justice and fairness leads to a separation of powers concern. However, there is no authority that holds that being guided by the principles of equity and justice and fairness is the same thing as an equitable remedy like an injunction or specific performance. So I can name all the equitable remedies. We're just saying that this is what they need to be guided by whenever you're making a decision. Administrative agencies don't have a license to act unjustly. That's implied. Justice is implied in any decision.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Ryan Farrell with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development and representing Labor and Industry Review Commission. With me at Council's table today is Kim Castellas. The Department and Commission respectfully ask this Court to confirm the Commission's decision that Friendly Village cannot be the successor of the unemployment account of Rhinelander Healthcare. The Commission reviewed the record and correctly found no excusable neglect and correctly did not consider the interests of justice factors in reaching its decision. This case concerns the scope and the extent of the Commission's power. I hope to discuss this morning that Friendly Village failed to meet its burden to show that its late successor application be granted due to excusable neglect because it did not prove that it acted reasonably. Second, this Court should not create equitable powers for the Commission because its statutory creation does not permit it to grant equitable. So the interests of justice factors do not apply to the excusable neglect analysis. The statutes considered by this Court in Casper and the other cases cited by Friendly Village concern courts exercising discretion to enlarge time and to avoid default judgments in civil litigation on quote-unquote just terms.
Do you think we need to overturn any part of CASPER?
No, Your Honor. I think that CASPER is distinguishable from this case. This would not be the case to review or overturn CASPER. We're looking at CASPER in the context of the case at hand deals with the Commission's de novo review of successorship under the unemployment law, which does not include the just terms language required for excusable neglect under the litigation statutes. Friendly Village is asking this court to deviate from the statutory language and amend the unemployment law to include interests of justice factors, which is something it may not do.
Counsel, in CASPER, the court just created those interests of justice factors, right? They don't appear anywhere in the statute. So why shouldn't we, based on your opposing counsel's argument, apply the law on excusable neglect consistently across the entire corpus of statutes?
Thank you, Justice Bradley. I understand that this court will look to the cases that come after this one, and that may be something the court would like to consider. However, for this case, I think it's clear that CASPER does not apply, and in my arguments, I'll explain why it's harmful to have CASPER apply to this chapter of the unemployment law. Should that decision extend further, we didn't brief that issue. But I will note that Friendly Village's argument fails because the statute does not allow the Commission to consider interests of justice factors when considering excusable neglect. And this may be hard for Friendly Village to accept, but it's simply what the law requires.
And but by what standard are bodies like LURC supposed to apply excusable neglect? It's not defined in the statute, so it can't just be whatever any administrative body's employee happens to consider excusable, right? There has to be some standard guiding those decisions so that we don't have individuals or regulated entities being treated differently simply because a different employee handled their matter, right?
Correct. And the definition of excusable neglect, as long held by this court, is the neglect which might have been the act of a reasonably prudent person under the same circumstances. And that comes from Dugensky. And what is reasonable is an objective test. What is fair is a subjective test. It compares outcomes. What is reasonable compares conduct. What the employer did at the time that the neglect occurred. That is where the Commission looks. That's where the department looks, and that's where the focus should be made, on the conduct that occurred causing the neglect.
Counsel, they didn't file this ROBT form, and that's what you're here before us complaining about. They didn't file this form, correct? But the form they did file was online, and it's one the agency prepared, correct?
Yes, Justice Rubin.
And if they had answered that form yes, rather than no, when they were asked, did you acquire the activity, if they had answered that yes, then the agency would have sent them the ROBT form right away, correct?
Yes, they would have.
And they answered it no. So why shouldn't I be concerned that the agency has put together a form that asks about a transfer of a, quote, activity, not the transfer of a business? And we are here today about the transfer of a business. Why should I excuse the agency's use of a vague term like activity?
Well, thank you, Your Honor. And first, we look to the statute. Employers doing business in the state of Wisconsin are required to report a transfer to the department within 30 days after the date of the transfer. Friendly Village did not do so. When it did fill out the registration, which is the business registration, the whole purpose of completing this registration is for the business to report its transfer.
Okay, the first form they filed in August before the closing in September, correct?
In anticipation.
Isn't that correct? Okay.
Yes.
And it is that form that started the train off on the wrong track, correct? They were trying to comply. They filled out the form that your agency told them they had to fill out and it was done online, correct?
Yes.
Okay, now just let me finish asking the question. So if you would change this activity into this business or a reference that there was a change of business, just like you have, I mean, the ROBT form is very clear. Across the top it says report a business transfer. Business transfer is nowhere online in the form they filled out, correct?
Not in that question.
It is not in the form that they filled out. So what you want us to do is to say they're at fault for not filing ROBT, which you never sent them, but you never sent them because they checked no rather than yes, not understanding what activity meant. So why shouldn't I consider the fact that they didn't understand what activity meant when clearly they meet all the criteria for a business transfer? Why shouldn't I consider the use of activity as indicative of excusable neglect? Because it started the train down the wrong track, correct?
Two reasons why. One, okay. The commission found that that was a straightforward question and required no special skill or acumen from the employer's point in answering it, only that a truthful answer be made on that form. And as soon as a yes answer is entered, the ROBT form is sent immediately by
the
department.
There'd be no reason why they would answer it wrong. I mean, they were trying to comply with the form that your agency put online, and that's why they filled it out a few days before the sale closed in September. Where they got into trouble is because your agency never sent them the form that now we're all in court arguing about. Never sent it to them, correct? And they only found out about it from a third party, and then they asked, would you send it? You did. They filled it out and immediately returned it.
Yes,
so why can't we consider the fact that the word activity is used rather than business transfer on the agency's own form that they initially filled out?
And respectfully, in the statute, a business is deemed transferred if any asset or any activity of an employer is transferred in whole or in part by any means. That's the statutory language. There's nothing in the record to know why the analyst answered the way he did. He did not testify. And so to rely on the corporate manager's view of the business analyst is to rely completely on hearsay to decide the ultimate truth of the matter.
You're dealing with the corporation. We let other persons testify for corporations because they're legal fictions. They can't get up and talk for themselves, right?
Well, hearsay if the individual had actual knowledge, but the corporate manager said maybe because the way the registration was filled out, there might have been a misunderstanding or a mistake on one of the questions. That doesn't show certainty of why the analyst answered the way he did.
Why would you think that there wasn't an honest mistake? I mean, why the heck would they bother to fill out the form at all? They're only doing what your agency put online. It, to me, this feels like I gotcha, and it makes me uncomfortable because I think that we should try to make the law as plain as possible to everyone and then expect they will comply. And clearly, your form is not as plain as possible.
Respectfully, Your Honor, if the individual had questions, they could have contacted the department for information. They did not do so. They were new to the business environment of Wisconsin, and so they have a heightened obligation to understand what the laws of this state say
but
and what they
agree,
require.
Don't you, that they do qualify as a business transfer? There's
yes,
no
that
question.
That is undisputed, that the other requirements of successorship are met.
Well, why
and just,
not take your part in the mistake, then? And say that we should have used transfer of a business as we do on the ROBT rather than acquire an activity as you do on the online form.
Well, I think it's important to look to the actual question and just quote it verbatim. The question asks, did you acquire this activity from a previous employer?
Right.
The commission considered that question and the analyst's actions and did not find that it was excusable because this business, Friendly Village, is in the business of acquiring and rehabbing nursing homes.
But why didn't your form just say, did you acquire this business from a previous employer?
The form doesn't assume that a business was or was not acquired. It's up to the employer to just answer that question honestly.
Well, they answered it honestly because that's why they got goofed up.
I'm afraid we don't know why the answer was given based on the analyst not testifying. And this court said in the Gehan case that uncorroborated hearsay is not acceptable to reach a final conclusion.
Mr. Phil, we're an agency. We generally don't follow the rules of evidence like we do in a courtroom.
Yes.
So why are we relying on uncorroborated hearsay with your agency?
Well, that's what the Gehan case is all about, is that the rules of civil procedure are ordinarily relaxed for administrative hearings.
Right.
But no issue can be decided solely on the basis of uncorroborated hearsay, and that's all we have here. Friendly Village was represented by competent counsel. It had an opportunity to call its witness. Any discussion that the analyst was unavailable is unsupported in the record. There's nothing to show as...
So, counsel, if the person had testified, the nephew had testified in this case, that he misunderstood the form because they used the word activity instead of business, would that be something that you would find to potentially be a basis for excusable neglect?
Thank you, Justice Dowd. The commission absolutely would have weighed.
Okay, but here what I hear you saying is there wasn't any reasons really given for not filing it. There was just speculation on the part of someone who didn't file the form.
That is correct. And this court can decide that Friendly Village did not meet the excusable neglect standard without even addressing interests of justice as an issue. And again, as Friendly Village is in the business of acquiring other businesses, it failed to act reasonably by appointing an analyst who it may have believed was inexperienced to do the important task of filling out a business registration, to not check the analyst's work before submitting the form, to not call the department if it had questions that would have been answered if called. That's in the record.
But isn't the agency in control of the form they filled out? The agency could have written business, right? Transfer of a business on the form. But they chose not to, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
We have the language, and the top of the form does say registration.
Mr. Farrell, can you distinguish for me what happened in this instance and what happened with the North Point Nursing in Oshkosh?
Yes, Justice Karofsky. The commission considered what was in the record, and the argument was made that those two instances were similar. And the commission found that it did not appear that those two fact patterns were similar, and that erroneously forwarded mailing that Friendly Village sent to its predecessor business is what caused the breakdown in that situation. Different facts. And importantly, those individuals dealing with Norport were not at the hearing. The record be decided by the commission involved only Friendly Village, and it ruled just on that case. And the North Point situation, if it had been appealed, would have been weighed by the commission, but we have no information on how that case, what would have been in that record. So it's speculative. And the commission did properly weigh the excusable neglect elements in the record in this case and found there were none.
But there were shared facts between the two applications, right? Because wasn't it the same employee who answered the question the same way on the North Point application?
Yes, that is correct. And it's the same parent company. But we don't know anything other than that in this record. So
why in your briefing do you say throughout that employee falsely answered the question? Is there any evidence in the record that there was an intentionality behind his answering of the question rather than it being a mistake?
No, there's nothing in the record to suggest that it was intentional. The only thing in the record is we know the analyst's answer was not true, so therefore it's false. We know it's not true because Friendly Village is in the business of acquiring nursing homes, and the commission considered this, his answer, and found that it was less excusable than it might have been. And it's something that the analyst should have known or must have known, that his company that he works for is in the acquisition business. This isn't an employer that has never made an acquisition before. It's the whole business model here.
Does your argument depend upon this court determining that employee falsely answered the question rather than mistakenly answered the question?
Not at all.
Is the word activity defined anywhere? If I'm filling out this form, sometimes you have comments or definitions or guidelines or something. Was that part of this form so that you could read it and say, okay, this is an activity, or no, it's not an activity?
Yes. Thank you, Justice Eagler. In the Administrative Code, Chapter 115, there is a long list of what constitutes business activity. In the form, the question asked, did you acquire this activity from another employer? That's a yes or no question. If a business has further questions about whether they qualify for an optional successorship, they may call the department and ask.
Is acquisition ever not an activity?
Under the statute and under the administrative code, there may be instances where an optional successorship is denied, given the facts of the transfer. For example, if a business acquired a customer list or goodwill from the employer or just real estate, that might not be a successor under the unemployment law. Now, the facts in the record are undisputed that there was all the other elements of successorship were met, but for the untimeliness.
I'm just trying to figure out I think the record reflects this was a young 22-year-old in this position, granted didn't testify, but should we be sending it back for testimony from that person? Or I'm trying to figure out how someone figures out whether or not this acquisition qualifies as an activity, because you want to do your best to fill it out.
So I do not think that a remand is necessary here. Friendly Village was fully represented by counsel. They control the witness. They could have called the witness. They chose not to, and we can take an inference on what that witness may or may not have said. But the commission is bound by their record here. And I think it's important to note that...
Okay, so back to just how, if I'm filling out this form, and I think the record's clear, it's a 22-year-old, so pretty fresh out of college, if went to college, right?
2 degrees, yeah.
Right. So how do you, but no JD or something like that. So how do you figure out, you're sitting at the desk, you figure out it's an activity because of what? You turn to the admin code? Does it point out where to go to figure that out?
The form doesn't direct individuals to the admin code, but if the question is, if it's unknown how to correctly answer, it's important that the analyst ask his supervisor, the supervisor check his work, that they contact the department if they have questions. But the whole purpose of this form of registering in Wisconsin is to report the transfer.
I guess if every business transfer is an activity, why bother with this form?
Not every business transfer is an activity.
Okay, but that's where we started. So if you have a customer list or goodwill alone, that may not be an activity?
So
like the bulk of business transfers are activities, right?
That's not in the record in terms of how many of them are, but
fair enough.
Answering yes kicks off the process. The department will contact the transferor, the transferee, gather information, records, send the form, explain anything that the transferee needs to know about the transfer.
So the form would have said something like, is this a business transfer and or activity? Then they would have answered this yes. That seems pretty clear, right?
It's hard to know without the analyst explaining whether he was confused, how he would answer. Yeah. But I think it's important that Friendly Village is arguing that the commission or the department are acting as a court, and that's exactly what they're asking this court to find, is to empower an administrative agency to have equitable powers that are written nowhere in the statute. And that violates this court's holding in Kalal, that we look to the statute and we don't amend the statute with language.
I wouldn't create a new standard. I'm just trying to figure out if this is excusable neglect, actually. And you take into consideration what was done, and not just did they goof up, but does it meet the standard of excusable neglect? And I'm trying to, that's what I'm personally trying to weigh and consider.
Yes, and this court has weighed many cases involving excusable neglect, albeit in circuit court, and with a court's discretion in a particular case. And the court has held that it's the actions, an objective test, the actions of a reasonable person under similar circumstances. So that's the test for Friendly Village. The commission considered that test. It weighed all the evidence in the record before it, and A textually driven analysis results in only one outcome, and that is that the excusable neglect is the standard, and the commission carefully reviewed the record before it and found no excusable neglect.
I don't think the commission ever reviewed the misleading implication of this activity that's in the form of the agency.
The commission found as a fact that it was a straightforward question and required no special expertise, and that...
But it doesn't direct the responder to what they want to know about, which is this a business transfer? I have a hard time understanding why the agency doesn't bear some of the responsibility for the lateness of the ROBT form, which is what's caused all of this hoop-de-doo in the courts.
And that form, respectfully, that form is only sent out with a yes answer.
I understand, but you only get a yes answer if you put business activity instead of just this activity or business transfer. You got a no answer because they didn't think that's what you were talking about, right?
Friendly Village is new to doing business in this state. It has a heightened obligation to know the state's law, and ignorance of the law is always unreasonable. Friendly Village cannot cite a case in which a party acted unreasonably and excusable neglect was...
My concern is not so much about how they acted unreasonably, but I think that LURC set this whole ball rolling down the wrong track by the wording they chose on their own form. I mean, if they weren't trying to comply with the state's rules, they never would have filled out the darn form to begin with, right?
The department's form reflects the language in the statute, and the statute there.
But you don't refer to the statute in the form, and you don't define activity in the form.
Well, putting in a lot of legalese and statutory sites could actually work against the clarity. Just, did you acquire this, yes or no? If you have a question, call. It reflects the language in the statute, also in the administrative code.
Well, obviously, they didn't understand it, or they would have answered it differently.
Okay. Mr. Brill, can you help me a little bit with the record? I understand Justice Rogensack's concerns, and my question for you is, has this been pled by Friendly Village? That is, did they argue it in front of the ALJ? Did they argue it at LURC? Did they argue it in the I'm looking through the briefs. For a fourth or fifth time, I'm not seeing these specific arguments raised here, so I'm just wondering if you could give me some sense of when they've been raised and how they've been dealt with below.
And Friendly Village didn't argue it because they really couldn't. There was nothing in the testimony or in the record to show any sort of confusion. That's why the corporate manager said it might have been a mistake or it might have been an error. He wasn't sure because he didn't know. He didn't have information on what caused the false answer. So, no, that couldn't be argued because there was nothing in the record to show the nature of the mistake. The commission has reviewed numerous excusable neglect cases, one where there was an intentionally wrong answer, others where a party didn't carefully read a departmental form. It also looked at a case where a system was in place to respond timely to business transfers. Here, there was no system in place, and that's what Casper looked at. Casper, a circuit court judge, found there was excusable neglect. That was appealed. This court did not find that court exercised erroneous discretion in reaching that. Noted in that decision in Casper is that a system was in place to prevent untimeliness. Here, the corporate manager, in his first correspondence by email to the department, admitted that they were not familiar with Wisconsin law, they believe it was an error, and we have put measures in place to prevent such oversights in the future. That's unreasonable.
So, counsel, what I hear you saying is that nowhere until now has your opposing counsel raised the issue that this was a vaguely worded statute as the basis for, or vaguely worded question in the form that formed the basis for why they checked the box.
They argue speculatively that the analysts may have been confused.
Right, but may have been confused doesn't say the word activity doesn't mean to us transfer.
That argument was not raised specifically.
I thought there were questions about filling out the form specifically that were answered. You may not have liked the person that answered them, and it wasn't the same person who filled out the form, both on behalf of a corporation. But I thought there was testimony about, did you acquire this activity from a previous employer at the hearing before the ALJ?
Well, obviously not from the analyst, but there was no discussion of
who testified on behalf of the corporation?
The corporate manager who...
Okay. The corporate manager was authorized by the corporation to testify, and
correct.
He talked about this phrase, correct?
He didn't answer the question. The analyst did, and he didn't give his opinion on that phrase in the testimony. So there's nothing in there. The Friendly Village did not meet its burden of proof that the phrase was ambiguous and that the neglect was excusable.
If Friendly Village had persuaded you that they were confused by the word activity, would you have excused the late filing of the ROBT?
Well, I think under cross-examination, there may have been questions and answers, and given that record, there might have been a different outcome. Yes, and every case is looked at based on the record. But with nothing in the record, it's just impossible to reach that excusable.
We have a different view of nothing, you and I.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, let me see if I understand your argument. I think it's axiomatic that Lurk is a creature of the legislature, and they only have the powers that are expressly given to them by the legislature. Is a subjective, equitable power given to the legislature in the text of the statute?
No.
And so you don't get to the equities. Was it fair for the Lurk to do this, or fair, not fair, and was the right word used? Your focus is on, is it excusable neglect, and the definition that's been given to excusable neglect, which is does not include carelessness, does not include some kind of negligence or inattentiveness. It is excusable neglect means that neglect which, quote, might have been the act of a reasonable, prudent person under the same circumstances. You earlier said in your comments that there were dangers of giving subjective powers when only objective, reasonable standard is set forth in the statute. What are those dangers to give regulatory authorities the subjective power as opposed to objective?
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. There are unforeseen possibilities here, and it could open a Pandora's box of consequences that were not written in the various laws where excusable neglect language is found. And I cite those in my brief all throughout different parts of the law, in family law, in securities law, in elections law, all over the place, where there's no annotation of interests of justice factors. So this court could, if finding interests of justice factors, allow the next litigants to argue that they can look beyond the excusable neglect language and consider subjective factors looking to future possible impact. And again, there's nothing in this record of any negative impact for Friendly Village. There's nothing about that. That would allow them to go, allow agencies and government officials to go beyond their statutory authority, and the court should simply not allow that. That's a separation of powers issue. So in conclusion, this court, I'm actually out of time, but I believe that Friendly Village didn't meet its burden here, and for the reasons we discussed today, Your Honors, we respectfully ask this court to confirm the decision of the commission. Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Counsel, as you're approaching the podium, in the interest of time, I'm going to start my question.
Are you
asking this court to apply some amorphous fairness standard rather than the statutory language of excusable neglect?
I'm asking for the same factors from Casper. There's got to be consistency in how excusable neglect is done. It can't be that in one place it's one thing, another thing it's another place thing, and depending on who's the worker at the agency, that it's, you get different results and it's all over the board. People who expect to go in front of the government, be it court or an administrative agency. And it shouldn't be based on who the worker is who looked at your file. I mean, in this case, you have two nursing homes acquired the same day, same circumstances, and because we had a different worker, we have one result versus another result. So that shouldn't be the case. I mean, there should be a standard definition that's standardly applied. And yes, I understand there is an amorphous definition for excusable neglect. However, what I believe CASPER did is it gave guidelines for more standard results.
So, Mr. Stein, if I understand, there were two individuals, one who filled out the form for Friendly Village and one who filled out the form for North Point, correct?
No, it was the same person who filled out the form.
It was the same person?
Yeah.
So he knew what an activity was in North Point.
No, they filled it out the same way for both places. That's the whole crux of the case.
And then the mailing got lost.
The whole case is that. And we did argue that the activity was not defined. It's in our petition for leave to appeal. It's in our briefs. I remember it was argued by my predecessor counsel because I literally copied word for word her argument. So it saved me some time. So I remember that it was argued. So it's there, and I'm looking on page. I mean, I did a quick search on my computer during the argument. I mean, it's right there on page 33 of our petition for review. The term activity is not defined. There are no instructions or explanations to assist in understanding of the question or providing the response. The undefined term is ambiguous on its face.
Okay, but counsel, isn't the responsibility that you have to prove the reasoning why the form was checked incorrectly? So it would be up to the people testifying to say the reasons why they didn't check the box. And if this person believed that activity was too vague, that would be the reason given. This record, though, contains no reasons given. It contains some speculation about what might have happened. It might be this, it might be that, but there's nothing concrete. And aren't we bound by the record? It's one thing for us to speculate as well. Well, maybe this, maybe that. Maybe they knew full well what activity was, and he just wasn't paying attention. We have no idea because that was never testified to. I mean, isn't that your responsibility at the hearing?
First of all, Exhibit 3 that was admitted at trial did say the reason the report is being returned late is as follows. We did not receive a letter from the Department of Workforce Development for this facility, apparently as a result of an error in completing our initial DDW account for the application, and we did argue.
Right, we know it's an error, but that still doesn't tell us why. There's nothing in this record as to why the person did what they did. That is the whole crux of excusable neglect. Wouldn't you agree? Is looking at, I mean, the language is the language. We did not create this. This is the statutory language, excusable neglect. It has to mean something. It can't just mean it's an error. Or else if there was any error ever, you would get the relief. So it has to be excusable neglect. If someone doesn't testify to why the error was made, how are we supposed to know? How is LURC supposed to know? How is the ALJ first and then LURC in review supposed to know whether it was or wasn't excusable neglect?
And it was in the record. We did argue it. There was a briefing after the hearing.
Okay, I get that you argued it, counsel, yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is no one testified to that. The record is the record. You can make an argument, although you did not make an argument in your briefs to us. I can tell you that because I've looked through them. But regardless of that, you have the record, and that's the place that you're stuck with, too, as an appellate advocate, is the record. So where the record does not give any reasons why this was not filled out, right? And there's no reasons given. There's just speculation.
After the hearing, there was an opportunity for a briefing. I know it's in the briefing because I remember that I saw it in the briefing and I incorporated it in our arguments.
So you created an argument of a reason why the person didn't fill it out because you're saying it's vague. But the person never said, I didn't fill this out because I didn't understand what it meant. No one said that. Is that, I mean, do we agree on that, that nobody said they didn't understand what it meant?
Counsel, go ahead and answer the question. Your time is up, though.
I believe it in the record that specific question was never asked to my client, but I believe that it's implied from the testimony that there was confusion because of the term activity. And can I point to this right now?
Yes, please. I would love to.
I can't do it right now. But if the court would permit, I can
I can read the record myself. Yeah. It's not that long. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right. Thank you for a very interesting argument. The court will recess and reconvene for our second cases. I think Port Washington High School joins us then. All right. Have a good day.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Safe driving. Yeah, thank you. You too. Maybe we'll see an alumni event sometime for a UW alumni event. Or maybe alumni weekend.
Riley has no pen.
Should they be? Yep. This is Ann Walsh. Riley only has one. Yes. Okay, it is what it is right this second. Something I was going to do and I forgot. Oh, did you turn the thing around out there?
That's mine, yeah.
here. There you go. Is the mic on? It is.
The mic is on.
Okay.
You can test it if you want to.
May it please the court. Okay.